Hi, this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Start from Scratch in the Copywriting Field and End Up Getting $1 Million Sought After Results. Here's an interview with legendary copywriter David Garfinkel. After reading the motivational book, Do What You Love and the Money Will Follow, David Garfinkel quit his job as a reporter and decided to pursue his dreams. He quickly went broke, but because he kept taking chances while following through on every opportunity, he eventually ended up on top. And in this audio interview, you'll hear his amazing story. David now works as a highly paid and sought-after direct sales coach and copywriter who makes anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000 per client. But he admits the climb to the top is not always and rarely should be an easy one. According to David, you've got to go through experiences in your career where you're underpaid and giving more than you're getting in order to gain the confidence and skills necessary to become successful in the direct sales copywriting field. And in this hour-long interview, you'll hear the steps you can take to get started today. You'll also hear about a down-to-earth look at aggressive marketing, how to know when enough is enough. You'll learn why it's so important in copywriting to make prospects think you're one of them. You'll learn the most important and often overlooked area that David says he was missing from his copywriting that once he added made his career take off. You'll learn why David says he didn't experience the wonders of direct mail until he went online and how you can make the most of the internet too. You'll learn what to sell as a seminar speaker if you don't have your own product. You'll learn three of the biggest mistakes David says he's made in his career and how to avoid them. And you'll learn about the one and only kind of business you'll never want to work with as a direct sales copywriter. According to David, you should never judge your copy by how easy or pretty it is, only by the kind of results you get. And in this interview, you'll hear how David gets his $1 million results and how you can begin getting them too. Now let's get going. For more information on David's copywriting templates, go to www.davidgarfinkeltemplates.com. Before we get into this, you were telling me how you went broke, so I want you to tell me that story first. How is it that you went broke?
I went to Chicago, and I was really good at writing about computers. By now, it was the mid-'80s, and the San Francisco bureau chief job opened up after 40 years. One person had been sitting on this job.
San Francisco bureau, what is that?
The bureau is like the field office for reporting, and so I'd been in the Chicago bureau. And I didn't really like living in Chicago that much. And it turned out there was a job opening in San Francisco, and that would be like the top reporting job in San Francisco for the news service. And so I applied for it, and I got it. And I thought, oh, well, now that I'm living in San Francisco instead of Chicago, life's going to be wonderful. And it turned out that life was exactly the same, you know, because it was the job, and it was the people I was working with that were making me feel the way I was feeling. Or maybe it was something inside of me, but it certainly wasn't the city I was living in.
How were you feeling?
Lousy. Terrible. I mean, I was smoking myself to death, drinking as much as I could to numb the pain.
Were you doing the same thing in Chicago?
Oh, yeah. Well, in Chicago, it's called antifreeze. But, yeah, pretty much. So, you know, I heard of this book called Do What You Love and the Money Will Follow. And I thought, oh, I'm not loving what I'm doing. So call this magical thinking. I don't know. I said, I'm going to quit and I'm going to do something else. I didn't even know what else I was going to do. I thought everyone had it better than I did. It was not a moment of clear-headed thinking in my life. So I quit and proceeded to go deeper and deeper into debt and, you know, use up all my savings and run up all my credit cards. And I started a business in the early 90s where I was teaching people how to do public speaking, which is sort of odd because I didn't know myself.
How old were you when you quit that job, the San Francisco Bureau?
32.
How long were you just kind of drifting around?
I'd say 5-6 years.
Okay, so you went through your savings and you're just screwing around.
I was looking for something. Yeah, I mean, I was making an effort. I was doing whatever freelance writing or consulting or coaching or whatever I could pick up, but I just didn't have a lot of focus.
Okay, so give me the scoop on Gary Halbert. How is it that you met him and ended up down at his seminar?
I was in this business with another guy, and we were teaching people public speaking, and I got this newsletter. You know, in those days, he was charging $200 a year for the newsletter, and in order to increase letter, so-and-so has gifted this to you, and then there was a newsletter, and I read it, over and over again, and I thought, I've never seen anything like this. I was floored, and the next one came, and the next one came. I said, I don't understand what he's doing, but whatever it is, I want to do it. When people come into direct marketing from being an outside salesperson, they get it. A lot of people like Dan Kennedy and Yannick Silver and others, they realize, oh, this is a way of getting prospects to call you, and it eliminates the need for cold calling, and it's much more efficient. I was looking at it more from the point of view of being a writer and thinking, wow, you can make a lot of money doing this. So that, I think, was when I first started to put it together. Oh, I could make a lot of money writing this way, and this is really cool what he's doing. This looks like a lot of fun. I had no idea how hard it was. It was very, very hard at first.
So you got his pitch for the Hurricane Andrew seminar?
Yeah, and that was an interesting pitch. There were sort of two sides to Gary, and I don't think many people have talked about, you know, everyone knows he's this copywriter and wild man, and maybe sort of on the edge. But I also feel like there was this very humanitarian, almost spiritual side to him, too. And maybe that was just part of his pitch. I don't know. But I always felt that. And the pitch for the Hurricane Andrew seminar was, come to this seminar. It's free. And all I ask is at the end of the seminar, you write a check to the Red Cross for whatever amount you think the seminar was worth. And, I mean, I didn't have two nickels to rub together. I don't know how I got there. I went there with a buddy. We roomed together, and he's a mailing list broker, so he was sort of in the business. I knew him from my mastermind group.
How many people were there, do you remember? Packed?
Yeah, it was packed. There were a few hundred people there, I think. It was in Key West. And that was definitely a turning point in my life. In a very big way. I remember one of the things Gary made us do is go to this shop and buy these baseball hats with a gray ponytail attached to the back of it. He said, because if you wear this, you'll look like the locals, which was, you know, preposterous, but a really important lesson. In any kind of direct response letter, the person needs to think, oh, this guy's like me. He understands me. He's one of us. He's part of my tribe. He's part of my group. And, yeah, I got so much out of that letter. I remember sort of like a little snapshot in my mind that someone was talking, and I was writing as fast as I could, taking notes, and Carlton and Halbert looked over at me, and I think they were worried that I was going to have a heart attack or something. I mean, there was a look of genuine concern at how worked up I was getting.
Did they say anything?
No, but I talked to Carlton about that years later because, you know, he and I are friends, and I've been his wingman at some seminars, and he's done some hot seat seminars. And he said, yeah, we were going to call the EMT or something. I really got excited. Writing was like something I did. You know, there's a guy in Hollywood named Robert McKee. He teaches screenwriters, and he says, writing is the hardest thing in the world, except for a writer, and then everything else is harder. That's sort of been, you know, a story for me, that every time I tried to get away from it, it would just keep bouncing back to me like a magnet. So I'd done it, but I was never really passionate about it. But copywriting, I got passionate about it. I really liked it.
Do you know how Gary Halbert died? I'm just curious.
All I know is what I read, and that was that he died peacefully in his sleep in a hotel. That's all I know.
So John Carlton was there, Ted Nicholas spoke there, David Deutsch. Was Joe Vitale there?
Joe was not there, no. I was on a mission at that point. You know, I realized the one missing piece of my education as a writer was persuasion and sales. I mean, I'd done some sales training. I'd studied selling, but I hadn't really learned the bigger picture of persuasion. So I started going to all these NLP persuasion seminars all over the country throughout the 90s, and one of them was with Michael Hall, and that was in Houston, and I was in touch with David Deutsch at that point. Said, hey, you ought to meet my friend Joe Vitale. I said, okay. And so I did, and we really hit it off. We liked each other. I mean, I just talked to Joe earlier this week. They've been friends for a long time. In fact, he was interviewing me for his Hypnotic Gold series, but at the time, we just met, and because of the connection we made, and then, I don't know, 6 years later that I came out with my first copywriting course, Joe introduced me to Mark Joyner, who was just starting up Aesop Publishing at the time. And he said, send this to Mark. He would actually digitize, I mean, this is a cassette and workbook thing. It's late 90s, right? Early 2000. He said, he'll put this online. He'll sell it. So I sent it to Mark, and I remember getting this email from him. He said, David, I'm only half an hour into this, and I know that I want to do this. Well, thank you, man. That's great.
Now, what did you put together?
I put together something called the Money-Making Copywriting Course.
Was this like your first product?
It was my second product, really. Actually, my first product was one of the big attractions of copywriting to me. I put together this audio cassette called Let Your Clients Do Your Selling.
describe that, I want to ask, was the Halbert seminar, Hurricane Andrew, a direct influence that you need to create your own product and start selling it yourself?
No, I had already done that. My problem was I wasn't able to sell it in writing. I had to sell it over the phone for a $30 product. When I was broke, it was not a very efficient way to sell it.
Had you created a product before you hit Halbert seminar or gotten his newsletter?
Probably after I'd gotten the newsletter and before I'd hit his seminar.
All right, so after you got his newsletter, that was an influence for you to create your own stuff and sell it. Because he was always talking about creating your own report and market it yourself.
Yeah.
And I heard that in the interview with Ann Sieg about that referral product, and you said that you just couldn't sell it or it wasn't selling?
Well, see, the only way I knew how to promote it was with PR because I'd been a reporter, but I didn't know how to set up an order page or, you know, how to do an order form through the mail. I didn't know anything like that. So people would call me about it, and they'd ask me about it, and I think I'd get a check or take a credit. It was incredibly inefficient, so I needed a more efficient way to sell it.
Let's go back to Mark Joyner. He's halfway through this product that you created.
He's halfway through the first audio cassette. It's like a 6 or 7 hour course. And he says, yeah, I definitely want to publish this. This was like a multimedia thing. There were sealed envelopes inside that you'd have to open, and there were flashcards and a manual and everything. And he found a way to put all of that online.
Now, had Mark already promoted Joe Vitale's book at that time?
I think so. I think that was how Joe knew Mark.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
I think Mark promoted his book because I interviewed Joe, and he told me about that story. How Joe had heard about this guy, Mark, and Mark said, I want to take your book and sell it online. And Joe's like, what are you kidding? You know, sell it online? What are you talking about? And then he ended up selling like thousands of copies of his book.
Yeah, Mark's an incredible marketer. Mark had actually come up with a report on, I don't know, maybe a search engine positioning or something. And he gave it away, and he had like 1 million downloads. And this was like in the 90s or something. It was like awesome.
Yeah, he must have had a humongous mailing list.
He has a strategic way of thinking, understands the internet really, really well, and knows what to do.
Did he end up promoting your product?
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
Oh, it changed my life.
Can you say how much stuff he sold?
I don't know, but we sold a lot.
Were you still broke at that time?
No. This was like 7 years later. I was way past that. Yeah, I mean, I was at that point a copywriter, and I was doing coaching and consulting, and so I was...
For more information on David's copywriting templates, go to www.davidgarfinkeltemplates.com.
Not where I am today, but I was comfortable, or more comfortable than I'd been when I was going broke. We sold something like $60,000 worth of these courses in either the first week or the first month. I mean, I'd never seen anything like this. I didn't really personally experience the wonder of direct marketing until I went online. I mean, I'd already written a letter for somebody that was making them $5 million a year, but I wasn't seeing any of that.
All right, so you were only a coach and doing some copywriting for clients at that time.
Yeah.
How was the money in that in those earlier years?
It was from sort of hitting the bottom in the early 90s. Things got progressively better each year.
Had you learned how to be a coach? Like, you know, I mean, did you have some training on it? How to approach a client? How to say, here's what I'm going to do for you? How to negotiate the deal? Do you get money up front? I mean, did you make mistakes as a copywriter doing all the work before you got money? You know, stuff like that?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, being a coach and being a copywriter are very different things, but I sort of made it up as I went along.
Did you take any coaching courses where you were a student on the other end of coaching?
That's interesting. I didn't do that until I was coached, and I just liked the model so much I sort of decided how it was going to be and read about it. I actually interviewed Bill Walsh once, you know, the 49ers coach. But I didn't take a coaching course until a couple years ago. I'd been coaching for 25 years before I did it, and I'm really glad. You know, once I learned about coaching, I started getting coached, and I started coaching. I just think it's sort of a natural thing for me. It's like my personality, like writing and coaching. I often jump in without knowing what I'm doing and just do well enough or fail quickly and figure out what I'm doing and then get better at it. But, yeah, I didn't have any formal coach training until 2008.
Hey, if I was to, like, mention John Carlton, the first thing that sticks out in your mind, how would you describe his copywriting style?
He's really flamboyant, and he understands human emotions and the thought process that leads to a purchase as well as any human on the planet.
How about Ted Nichols?
I don't know. Ted's extremely successful, and I don't quite understand what he does.
I just got an email from him today. He's looking for, like, 4 clients, $100,000 a pop. He'll fly out. He'll turn around your business, write copy. Elite coaching platform. I've never seen anything like that from him. $100,000 a pop. He's looking for 4 clients.
Is he asking you to find them?
No. I'm on his list. There was an email that came in this morning.
He constantly makes these huge deals. I don't know what kind of results he gets, but I assume that they're very big. I just don't understand what he does or how he does it. I don't doubt him. He's in a different wavelength than me.
Yeah. Well, I think he's got a very large business. He's got a green business, a nutritional company that he's partly owns in Europe or wherever he is, green powder type stuff that he's working, big direct mail business in Europe. So there's a lesson to all this. You said, get off your ass, get out of the house, and go learn something and meet people.
You know, logic and prudence and common sense would have said, hey, I mean, you don't have any money. Don't go to this seminar in Key West with this crazy guy who's been in prison and writes all this questionable stuff. And my gut said, this is it, man. This is what you're going to be doing. Go for it. And I listened to my gut, and it was inconvenient and risky, and yet it was the right thing to do. And, I mean, I connected with a lot of people. I followed up with a lot of people, and I took some chances, and I stayed with it. And, wow, look what happened.
All right, so tell me where you're at right before the big show here, this Jim Edwards. How old are you, and what are you doing at that time before the Jim Edwards story? Give me a reference.
Yeah, so this is 2002. This is after I'd gotten the copywriting course online with Mark Joyner.
Once he launched that thing, did it put you on the map?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me how that put you on the map.
Well, one of the things Mark did that was very smart is he built up this huge affiliate base. I mean, he did many things that were very smart, but this is the one that I'm very aware of. And I probably took a more active role in promoting my product than a lot of people do individually. I not only created the product, which, you know, his people converted to online, I also wrote the sales letter, I wrote the sales emails, and I wrote a lot of content. And Mark would call me up and say, hey, could you put together 3 special reports today for our affiliates? And I said, yeah, okay. And I'd never, ever produced at that speed. But one of the things I remember very distinctly was that I had 6 articles about copywriting, all of which ended up with a link to this product. And he sent them out to thousands and thousands of affiliates. Many of them posted them on their websites.
Was your name all over them?
Well, they were by me. They were 6 Secrets of Copywriting by David Garfinkel. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Well, this was long before Google was sandboxing people or not listing duplicate articles. Recently, in the last 10 years, things have changed a lot with Google. But at the time, each one turned out to be a separate page because it had my name on it. And at one point, you would type in my name and it would be 500,000 search results. I mean, there are other David Garfinkels in the world. You know, there's doctors and professors, and I'm sure there's some garbage men and postmen and truck drivers and everything else. But the ones that show up on the web, there are other ones. But 99% of the David Garfinkels were me. And that was because of all of the content and copy I'd churned out and the way Mark had distributed it and motivated his affiliates. I used to have a one-liner that I'm famous on the Internet, but the great thing is I can go to any restaurant in the country.
And no one will know you.
No one, except Internet cafes, and they're all over me, man. People know me at conferences, you know, like at Internet marketing conferences, but anywhere else, I was just another person.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I did some work for a celebrity once. I'm not allowed to say who it was, but he's like instantly known. And I talked to his manager, and he said he always has to smile because of his persona. He always has to smile in the airport. It'd be nice if these people are being jerks to him. And when he starts to complain, I say, hey, well, do you like being seated quickly at restaurants? Do you like the free upgrades at the hotels? That's not a life for me.
Who was Jim Edwards at the time? What's the big show?
Well, Jim Edwards, my trials and tribulations look sort of minor by comparison. I mean, he'd gone from this high-flying realtor and financial guy to bankrupt. I never went technically bankrupt. He did, and he had like a best-selling e-book at the time that he went bankrupt, and he was humiliated by the bankruptcy judge. He said, well, some expert you are. I mean, imagine that. And they ended up living in a trailer park and delivering newspapers in the middle of the night. So he went from very quickly, very dramatically. He was also having huge health problems. He was having heart attacks at the age of 30. I mean, he's a real stressed guy, but he and Joe had written an e-book together, he and Joe Vitale. And Joe and I were doing this interview series of experts that, you know, hadn't really, you know, they were sort of on the fringe, on the edge, people who knew stuff but weren't well known in the public, and we had this subscription thing called Forbidden Secrets University. It was like, you know, all kinds of, you know, odd business stuff and some spiritual stuff.
How'd it go? Did y'all sell some of them?
It went well. You know, we sold a bunch of them. And one of the people on one of the calls was Joe. I guess Joe had invited him on because he was a partner and co-author. And after one of the calls, Jim called me and said, "We got to do an ebook together." I said, "What's an ebook?" And he explained. And so we did. We did an ebook about marketing ebooks, which actually was really good and still is really, really good, although it's based on some outdated, now not all the marketing techniques will work quite the way they did back when we did it.
But you had kind of known what an ebook was from the Mark Joyner situation.
Well, kind of, but my thing wasn't an ebook. I mean, mine was a multimedia program. You know, he took all the tapes, and the thing about it was people could get this audio course online.
That was very unique back then.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely the first one for copywriting, and it was pretty unusual for anything else, too. I mean, we didn't even have MP3s. We used real audio. You remember that?
Yeah,
So with Jim, he asked me to do a product, and that further got my name out there. And Jim also, he was a master of affiliate marketing. I mean, after he'd gone through all that hell, he came back with a vengeance, and he did real, real well. It took him a few years, but he really came to become a big name. And so we did a lot of the same kind of thing that I did with Mark with Jim. We did a lot of articles, and we had a newsletter, and we'd do affiliate offers for other stuff. And you know, I tend to be a homebody. I don't really like to go anywhere. And he said, "No, David, you got to go out there and meet people." And Armin Morin was just starting up his big seminars at the time. And so I listened to Jim. I realized he knew what he was talking about. So I went to big seminar in, I guess it was 2004. Armin was here in San Francisco. And I made a lot of connections there. I met Mike Stewart, and we became buddies. I learned a lot about audio and video from him. And I remember just hanging out with Armin. I was a smoker at the time, and Armin, I guess he's still a smoker. I haven't seen him in a year or two, but he's out there in the patio smoking. I said, "Hey, I'd like to speak at your seminar about copywriting." And he goes, "Okay."
Was this his first one?
Oh, no. This was like his third or his fourth one.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, "Okay, so, but Armin, I got a problem." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, I don't really have a product to sell." And he said, "Oh, that's no problem." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, what you do is you just sell a teleseminar series that you're going to do." And I went, "Oh, that's an interesting idea. Okay."
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Let me just stop you for a second because I thought back to Mark Joyner. So that whole product Mark Joyner put together, did he own the rights to it, or could you not use that?
Well, he didn't own the rights to it, and I couldn't use it. Because it was dated.
So it was dated already.
Yeah. I mean, this is 5 years later. Things had changed. There was a lot more going on the Internet. And I knew a lot more. And I realized my teaching approach was not what I wanted to, you know, I wanted to update things. So.
All right. So that was a great idea. He says you sell an upcoming teleseminar. And you're like, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah. So what I figured out is people didn't really want to learn copywriting. They wanted it done for them. Well, I don't believe it's possible to totally give people it done for them. What I did realize was possible was to make it a lot, lot, lot easier. And so I came up with a program where each portion of a sales letter, there'd be templates. It'd either be fill in the blanks, or it would be step-by-step guidelines on how to put a certain story together, or what are the elements of a guarantee, or what are the elements of an offer. And I gave a talk. It was a terrible time slot. It was like 8 a.m. Sunday morning that Armin gave me, but we got a lot of people in the room, and I must have sold a few hundred of them.
Like when you sold it from the stage, did he have support people there to take the money?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We had the order forms and everything. And yeah, Armin has a good operation with people. Armin's really good at that. So I remember Michael Fortin, who was a friend of mine at the time, said, "David, I'm very proud to tell you, I bought the first copy."
Oh, wow. That's cool. And that makes sense. What's the lesson? People want it done for them. How long did it take you to really realize that?
Probably about 10 years. I was so annoyed at how difficult it had been for me to learn copywriting that I was less concerned about the fact that people didn't really want to learn it and more concerned about how hard it was for those who did want to learn it. So I was determined to make it as easy as possible. And I think I've pretty much done that. I mean, I think I've come up with methods that take it about as far as you can. I did spend a couple years with a couple of good friends, including someone who knows a lot about programming and automation, to try and take my copywriting templates and automate them, put them into software, and we couldn't figure out how to do it. And I'm not saying it couldn't be done. I'm saying we couldn't figure out how to do it. So I feel like I've taken that as far as possible. Yannick may have invented the ultimate way to the done-for-you with his instant sales letters, I guess it was called.
You went 8 times. You got more clients hanging out in the bar in the smoking area than you ever did as a speaker. During those years, where was most of your money coming from? Was it with clients doing their copywriting for them?
Yeah, I was doing a lot of work with clients, and some of them I was getting royalties from, some of them I wasn't. Some I was getting pretty big fees from, so I was making money that way.
You hear the saying from Halbert and Carlton, clients suck. Do clients really suck?
Some do.
Give me a nightmare story about maybe a mistake you made with a client that could be a lesson for anyone who's going to work with a client could maybe possibly avoid. What's something that you overlooked that became a shitty experience with a client? Anything that sticks out in your mind?
I remember one guy, he was an heir to a famous family fortune, famous industrial company. I'm going to be really vague here so as not to identify him. And he was selling a really expensive product, and he wanted me to do direct mail for him. And every time I got somewhere, his vice president of market, I mean, he was the one who hired me, but I always had to go through her, and she never had any say in hiring me, and she was determined to make sure that whatever I came up with didn't work.
Had you gotten any money up front with this?
Oh, yeah, I got paid for it. I wasn't getting paid just on results, but it was very frustrating, and she was constantly sabotaging me. One of the things I learned is you've got to have clients where you're dealing with a decision maker and not a committee, you know, especially with direct marketing. The other time was when I worked for a Fortune 500 corporation, and they wanted to do some direct marketing, and they never mailed the letter. In fact, you just interviewed Ben Gay. I was whining to Ben about this whole thing. It was so frustrating. At one point, we had to get clearances for testimonials from their legal department, and there was this rush to get them the testimonials. So I got all the testimonials, and they were in San Francisco. I couriered them over to the building, and I got an email from my client's assistant saying, thanks for getting us the testimonials. We'll be back to you in a couple days. And I knew they were never going to mail the letter. And I was talking to Ben about it. He said, no, David, you don't understand. She actually accomplished her job. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, her job was to get a direct mail letter written. She did that. Her job was not to get a direct mail letter mailed. And I went, oh, man, I don't want to go through this again. He said, well, then you probably shouldn't work for a large corporation. Those are examples where clients suck. I've had more positive experiences than negative ones, and a lot of times it's because I'm pretty clear up front about how it's going to work.
What's the criteria? So if you're going to take on a client, you know, if you're going to say, here's how it works, what are you basically going to say?
The first thing is that they have to be sales positive, and they have to have a system to actually make money once they get a prospect or an order coming in. And that probably sounds pretty ridiculous. But you'd be surprised how many people in business hate sales and think sales are evil. You wonder, well, what are they doing in business? And I'd say, well, something other than making money. The other thing is, even if they're sales positive, that's not good enough. They've also got to be direct marketing friendly. And a surprising number of businesses think that there's something sort of icky about direct marketing. It's sort of embarrassing or shameful. People feel that way, I can't help them. How can I do something for them that they're fundamentally against?
And if they feel that way, there's a good chance they're not going to mail your piece.
Or they'll find some other way to screw it up and then blame you for it.
When you're taking on clients now or maybe even during those days at that time, was a big incentive on maybe a royalty or percentage on what sold where it was critical that they actually mailed your work?
Or oh, yeah. That's how I work now. You know, I'll charge $25,000 to $50,000 for a letter plus 5 to 10%, depending on the margin of what they're selling and how much of a role what I'm doing is going to play in securing the sale.
Is it 5 to 10% of a percentage of gross sales or per piece mailed?
No, I have friends who do that kind of thing. That's more of a publishing model or mass marketing model. I tend to work more in niche markets and more in B2B and consumer stuff. Yeah, if it were fundraising or subscriptions, then I might go to the pennies per piece mail.
Have you charged $50,000 for a sales promotion?
Mm-hmm.
$50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Do they pay you up front or like 50-50, or how do you work that out?
Yeah, sometimes they pay me up front. These days, I was talking to a friend, I said even Donald Trump probably couldn't pay up front. So sometimes there's payments, but, you know, when somebody makes a million or a couple million off a promotion, $50,000 is a reasonable base fee.
Like a $50,000 client, how much time involvement are you going to block off for yourself to work with that client? I know it depends, but can there be some examples where you can obviously look at their direct mail piece? Are you going against controls?
No, I mean, usually not. Usually I'm helping them in a startup situation for a new product. Writing doesn't usually take that long. Writing might take 2 or 3 days. The research and the thinking can take weeks or months.
Well, what do you tell them when they say how long will it take?
We sort of set a deadline, and anyone who needs something in a hurry, I send them somewhere else. Because, you know, I can write fast, but I can't write fast and make it work most of the time. You see, one of the biggest issues is getting into the mindset of the customer. You know, in terms of time, let me give you an example of something that took a lot of time. I worked with Ann Sieg and her folks on a sales letter.
The MLM people?
Yeah. Well, what they do is they teach direct marketing to MLM people, and they teach social networking. And she's also involved in MLMs directly, but I didn't work with them on that. I worked with them on their educational arm. And so they actually did a sales letter for a membership site, which I coached them on, and then I wrote a sales letter for an upsell. The upsell sold about $1 million in 2 days. There was no hard cost. There was a lot of labor that went into it. It was a mentoring program. Network marketers, as a rule, are very different than direct marketers or internet entrepreneurs in what I learned from her about her marketplace, and that is that, well, first of all, internet marketers and direct marketers are often very introverted and very, I don't want an organization, it's me and my outsourced contractors. That's the mindset of a lot of direct marketers. They don't have a company, an organization with a lot of staff. Network marketers are very social people. They love to talk to other people. Very extroverted, very community-oriented, very I want to be part of this thing, very cause-oriented. And for a lot of network marketers, the ability to connect with other people and be part of something important is even more important than making money. For an internet marketer, a direct marketer, making money is much more important than the social aspect. This sounds all real simple and easy now. It wasn't. You know, they told me that, but I didn't believe them because I'd never experienced anything like that, and I didn't see how you could possibly sell anything on that basis. And I had to interview a lot of people and think about a lot. And it's a very slow, creative, and digestion and sifting process, figuring out what does your prospect really look like, smell like, think like, what's on their mind when they wake up, how they go through their day. You know, Brian Keith Boyle talks about that. Actually doing that in a market that you're not familiar with, that can take time. Now, of course, if it's a market I'm familiar with, I can do things a lot more quickly.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how do you go about doing that research? You said you interviewed a lot of people. What's your method for taking out that research and creating the avatar?
I interview them on a conference line. I have a set of questions. I'll go deep. I'll ask questions. I'll ask them for examples. I'll listen for the assumptions and the beliefs and the feelings underneath their answers. I'll have it transcribed, and I'll just ruminate on it for a while. And, you know, you talk to enough people, and you start to get a composite picture.
That makes sense. Tell me the story about when you were at Ted Tebow's seminar and you went up against some Australian copywriter where y'all did a split test. What's that all about?
Ted was doing this internet marketing seminar, and one of the things he wanted to do during the seminar was prove that internet marketing worked. So he had this idea that we would sell, I guess it was the videos or transcripts or something of the seminar to people on his mailing list during the course of the seminar. So people at the seminar could see that these things really worked. So he had the sales letter written. The copy was already written, but he wanted a headline. So there was this guy in the audience. I won't mention his name. He's an Australian copywriter. There's many Australian copywriters, many good ones. And this guy came up with one, and it just sounded a little pokey to me. So I said, well, actually, I've got another one. Stuck my hand up and came up with a better one.
Do you remember what yours was?
Nope. I just remember it was better, and we split tested it, and sure enough, at the end of the seminar, I got twice the response and twice the sales of the other guy.
Okay, so what happened later?
Well, later, I was speaking at an event in San Francisco where this Australian copywriter was one of the sponsors of the event, and it was sort of hot in the room until I got in his presence, and I felt like I was in front of this polar ice cap.
You weren't thinking anything of it, were you?
I could see it in his eyes.
That he was kind of pissed?
Yeah. He had a long memory.
Oh, I see. And how many years later was that?
6 years later, maybe. You know, people carry grudges, and it didn't occur to me. I mean, I was so focused on the result, and I suppose I was focused on being the smartest guy in the room, that it never occurred to me to come back to bite me in the ass.
Okay. So you were going to speak at that seminar?
Yeah. And it was awful. Just everything went wrong. I didn't sell anything.
Did he sabotage you?
I couldn't say that.
Or was it more in your head?
Well, you know, when you're about to speak, you really want to go into a bubble. You want to go into a cocoon. You don't want to be in the midst of a lot of emotional darts and daggers. And he was making sure that I was in the middle of that. Was he sabotaging me? I don't know. That's possible.
All right, what's the lesson?
The lesson is sometimes it doesn't pay to be the smartest guy in the room.
Matt Fury. First, give me your impression of Matt Fury as a copywriter.
He's awesome. I don't think it's possible for anyone else to duplicate him. And I think a lot of it's because he's Irish and he has this storytelling tradition in his heritage. And that may sound racist, but I don't care. I revere the Irish storytellers, and I think that Matt is from a long line of storytellers.
Did you ever go through or get a hold of his email copywriting course? He's done a couple.
I've heard that he's done that, yeah. I don't know too much about that, but
okay,
I know that he got a lot of money for that. Yeah, so Harlan Tilstein and Kenrick Cleveland were doing this unconscious persuasion seminar. I don't remember what year exactly. Oh, it was probably about 2003, 2004. I attended as Harlan's guest, and I met Matt, and he starts shaking hands with me, and the hand starts going higher and lower, and I had this stunt pulled on me by a martial arts person where they sort of get you, and then all of a sudden you find yourself on the ground in a half Nelson or something.
When he was shaking your hand, it was going up your arm?
It was going, like, into a wider and wider arc.
Was he messing with you?
Yeah, I mean, he's a world champion martial artist. So at one point I looked him in the eye and said, what am I doing? And he laughed because, you know, he was busted. And we became friends right there, and he invited me to speak at his seminar in Tampa a few months later, or maybe the following month or something. I don't remember. Well, I had a product at that time that I'd done with someone else, and it was on public domain, on how to, you know, get public domain stuff and how to publish it and make money with it. And so I spoke about that, and I pitched the product. And we sold a few, and I made a few bucks. I mean, it basically paid my expenses out there. It didn't make a lot of money. But I made three connections there, and one of them turned out to be a very good friend, a very long-term client. And I made two more really good connections as well with people at that seminar. You would think a guy tries to trip you up and humiliate you, you probably shouldn't do business with him. I mean, that's the prudent thing to do, right? But I thought, no, he's just playing around. I don't think he means any harm.
You're talking about Matt.
Yeah. And it was a really valuable experience to go to that seminar, to see what he was doing, and to speak there. And I made some great connections. Now, Matt and I are no longer in touch, but no bad blood. It's just move on. I guess the thing is, it's really important, and I see a lot of people who don't follow up on opportunities that could turn into something because there's no guarantee or there's no certainty of where it's going to go. I don't know. Life's uncertain. You really don't know what's going to happen anyway. What do they say? To win the lottery, you got to buy a ticket. Well, I don't play the lottery very much. I like better odds than that. But these were better odds, but it was an unknown. I mean, I guess the lesson is follow through on opportunities because you never know where they lead to. But I knew where I wanted to go, and they helped me get there.
So you're making okay bucks, but you're not at the big bucks yet?
Well, it wasn't like in a movie where one day all of a sudden the money starts pouring. It wasn't like in Think and Grow Rich where all of a sudden this dam breaks. But, you know, at a certain point, I started to command a bigger fee. I'd made people millions of dollars, and I started to have the confidence and the track record to charge more money. And I started to make bigger money for my clients.
You had the confidence to charge more money because you had done it. Is that sometimes, in people's head, the only difference between charging very little, you know, compared to charging a lot, just that confidence level?
That's a great question. I'm going to sort of circle around to answer your question. There are a lot of people saying that there's a generation of people that has more self-esteem than actual skills. And I think it's possible to have, I'll make up a phrase here, premature confidence. I think you got to earn it. And to some degree, the old saw about paying your dues is true. And I also think you got to get underpaid, and you got to go through some experiences where you're giving more than you're getting before before you get your due.
Yeah.
And I think there's some people who don't. It's neither good for them nor for their clients because they walk in with a little bit of the imposter syndrome. You know the imposter syndrome, I'm afraid I'm going to get caught, I'm afraid I'm going to get exposed. So I wrote a sales letter that made a company about $40 million, and I charged $300 for it with no royalties.
Can you talk about what that product was?
Oh, yeah, I can describe that in great detail.
All right, how did you get the client?
My girlfriend referred them to me, and they were a travel company in Phoenix.
Multi-level?
No, they were a business-to-business travel company. They used to move movie crews around the country and, you know, summer stock theater.
So your girlfriend gave you a name of the boss?
Yeah.
You called him?
Yeah.
And then went in and met with him?
Well, no, I never met him.
Okay.
It was all over the phone. But what happened was they had a problem, and that was they were great at getting business by referral, but they had no idea how to market. And they had gone to some fancy schmancy ad agency who had made them this very slick-coated, beautiful brochure. It was so nice it probably could have hung as an exhibit in the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And they knew actually to the third significant figure what the response rate was when they mailed it because it was always the same, 0.000.
They couldn't understand it.
Well, they didn't, like, expect it would work. They just wanted to find something that would. All they knew is they were hogtied, hamstrung. They couldn't get new business. So I put together a two-page direct mail letter, and it was, you know, using Albert's white mail approach with postage stamp and just the return address without the business name on the front. And we got mailing list. I don't think you can get these anymore because the DMVs won't let you, but at the time they were Lexuses and Jaguars. And we figured that, you know, at that time a lot of entrepreneurs who'd made it would buy one of those cars to show the world they'd made it and to feel like they'd made it.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
What they could do is they could save money on tickets, and they could help people get real white glove treatment when they travel. And, you know, for a lot of companies, travel agencies, and this was when there was still margin in the travel business, so there was a lot different then. They would make about 10% margin on their sales. So the letter basically said, look, I'd like to give you a champagne vacation on a beer budget. You know, I know as an entrepreneur, you really need a vacation. And what we do is we provide first-class service at coach rates. We'd like to do it for your company, but tell you what, just to show you what our service is like, we'll do it for you for your vacation. We won't make any money on the deal, but you'll like us so much. This is not word for word. This is the essence of the letter.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. And you'll like us so much that you'll want to bring us into your company to work for you. And we've worked for all these other companies just like yours, and we love working with entrepreneurs. And I said, so if you would just allow us to have a 30-minute meeting with you, we'll give you a box of Godiva chocolates just for your time.
Do you remember how many mailed the first time?
They mailed 25 letters at a time. They had to stop mailing. They couldn't keep up with the appointment. Not only that, but once summer came around, you know how hot it gets in Phoenix in the summer? They would have had to carry the Godivas around in dry ice. So it was a good winter strategy, but it wasn't a year-round strategy. But they got so much business that they added $5 million a year to their top line. They didn't want any more business. They were full.
Do you still have that letter, like in your archives? Do you save it?
Yeah, I do.
Have you ever put together a swipe file of all your work?
No. I consider my work private for my clients. I do a lot of B2B stuff, and a lot of my clients don't want their competitors to see what they're doing. So
well, we're talking about the big bucks.
Yeah, so I'm not going to talk about my fees with Ann, but we've made a lot of money together. I made them a lot of money. And I think it was because I've joined a number of multi-levels. I love products from multi-levels. I'm not a multi-level marketer type. I'm not real social. I don't like all of the organization and stuff. But we connected really well. We've become good friends, and we just met. She was out here to speak at a conference of multi-level. She and Candace, her customer service woman. And so we got together and spent a lot of time together. Good friends, but that turned into one of the most profitable client relationships I've ever had.
I have heard of her. You know, the only way I have heard of her is there's this place on my site where people can get a free CD, and then I ask them how they heard about me, and I looked at the responses, and it was Ann Siege, where I'd look in my C panel and see where some of my referrals were coming, and she's been referring people over to my site for a long time. I've never talked to her, but when you said you had done stuff with her, I don't know if you talked to her.
Why don't you interview her? She's a great person to interview.
Has she made it big in MLM?
She's broken companies. And when I say broken companies, let me be real clear what I mean. She has gotten so many orders for companies they haven't been able to keep up. She is like a productivity machine. She's awesome. her marketing ability, and she's figured it out all through common sense.
Is she mainly MLM?
She's sort of two tracks. She works with MLMs in women's leadership and women's success, and she's also really into this whole attraction marketing thing, you know, softer version of direct marketing, social networking, info marketing. But she's also quite an expert on pay-per-click. She's done that. She's amazing. I'll be glad to introduce you.
Okay, I appreciate that. All right, tell me about Big Mike.
Big Mike just called me up one day, and he said, hey, I heard you mentor copywriters, and I'd like to find out what you do and how it works. That's sort of how I talk. And I said, sure. And I told him.
What do you tell him? If someone calls you today and says, hey, I hear you mentor copywriters, and I'd like to know what you do and how it works.
The nickel version is, I say, I don't really like to work with absolute beginners. I like to work with people who have some experience. And there are about three or four simultaneous tracks going on. One track is, I have a structured series of things that I insist that you do, and I ask you to do them exactly the way I tell you to do them. The second thing is I do what is called developmental coaching. It's a little more free form. I'm going to work on opportunities for inner growth with you. It's where insights and breakthroughs occur, and, you know, it's not structured. The third thing I'll do is I'll work on your copywriting through actual things you're writing. We'll go over them, critique them. I'll ask you questions. I'll invite you to think differently. And the fourth thing I'll do will be business coaching. We'll be helping you to strategize your own business, whether you're a copywriter or a business owner, and to think differently to help you get more of what you want.
Okay, so let's talk about Big Mike.
I think you heard about me from Perry Marshall or somebody, you know. I mean, the thing about Big Mike is he is like my ideal client or my ideal student, my ideal coaching client, because he studied everything and he just went at it pedal to the metal. No regrets, no hesitations. There was no ready or aim. There was just fire. But he worked really, really hard. He became a world-class copywriter. It took a long time. He's a very good speaker and salesman and innovator. Writing was not initially his strength, but it was just a skill he had to learn. He did everything I asked him to do, and he brought other guys on the call. It was interesting. He brought on, this guy's very private, so I won't mention his name, but he has a staff writer working with him. And this guy, he was like an award-winning journalist. He had a master's degree in journalism from a pretty good school. And he went through what I went through, learning to write copy. It's such an emotional shift going from reporting and storytelling without having any skin in the game or any ox to gore, you know, as just an article writer to a copywriter where you're being proactive.
Can you share what Big Mike was doing? What kind of business?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his company is called Advanced Nutrients, and they make hydroponics fertilizers and all kinds of hydroponics chemicals, and they hire PhD horticultural chemists. I'm not sure that's exactly what you call it, but the plant scientists in terms of the plant biology and the growing fertilization and everything. And they're based up in Vancouver in Canada, but they're worldwide. They have sales in 23 different countries and plants in three other countries and operations in three other countries besides Canada. So this is a chemical manufacturing business, very non-direct response oriented. And the thing about Mike is he was determined to use every technique and every aspect of what he learned from me in his business. And it didn't always work. I mean, he actually tried something once at a seminar where he hired a friend of mine, a very good platform salesman, to come in and sell stuff to store owners. And they hated it. You go to a lot of conferences and you're used to platform pitches. These guys were not used to it and didn't like it. So he picked himself up, dusted himself off, and tried something else. And he's done tear sheet mailings. He's actually publishing a magazine now called Rosebud, just for hydroponics growers. And he was an amazing guy. And the thing about him is he had a lot of desire and a lot of vision and a lot of follow-through. That was so important. And what I learned from him is that direct marketing can work any business, but here's the key, and I mentioned this before, a person at the top needs to think like a direct marketer in order for it to work.
He didn't hire you to write.
No, he did not. Actually, he hired me to write one thing, which was sort of a sales letter within a book that he wrote in another business that he had. But other than that, I was a coach.
So when you take him on as a client, I mean, does a client pay like a monthly fee, a yearly fee? You know, how do you structure that for like all the people who are selling coaching and consulting?
But basically, it's a one-time fee of $25,000 for 24 one-hour sessions plus, you know, some proprietary materials that I have. And what I do is I put them on a phone bridge line and we talk. It's all over the phone and it includes tweaks to their copy and instruction and developmental coaching and business strategy.
Okay, that's great. Do we have a lesson to this?
Yeah, the lesson is direct marketing can work in any business, but the person at the top needs to think like a direct marketer for it to work.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
You've got your West Asia client.
Yeah, I've got a client, and this is a current client. I know that they're very particular about my not disclosing who they are.
So can you tell how you got the client?
Yeah, I can. The owner of the company hired me many years ago to coach him in copywriting, and then he hired me later for business coaching, and then he heard I was doing something new, and he said, I want to hire you for that. And I was offering it at a promotional rate, and he said, here, I'm going to give you $1,000, and I'm moving to Asia. This is not an Asian guy. He's actually a British guy. I'll let you know, but let me hold it at the price. You know, here's $1,000. I said, sure. I didn't hear from him for 10 months. I thought, oh, man, what happened? Did he die? Did he change his mind? And I emailed him a couple times, didn't hear from him. Well, finally heard from him. He'd been sick. And he was well. He started up these operations. When we started the previous 12 months, he'd made about $1 million. By the way, this is not like Horn or Get Rich Quick. It's a very respectable business. It's just nobody doesn't want a whole lot of publicity. But made about $1 million a year with about a three-person company. In the first 3 months we worked together, he made $1 million. His goal was to expand to $10 million. I think he's going to do it, but he's basically quadrupled his income. He made about $1.1 million in the second quarter of our working together. What he did, we had a coaching call Tuesday, and he told me that his customers love his products, but they complain about the marketing. They say, you know, I love what you're doing, but your marketing is too aggressive. And they're still buying it, but they're complaining. That's an interesting lesson. And, you know, I mean, there's a few lessons there, Mike.
Yeah.
I mean, one of them is watch what people do. Don't always listen to what they say. I mean, sometimes you got to listen to what they say, especially if they're threatening to do something that's going to get into trouble. But in this case, people say, I really don't like your marketing. Yet they may not like it, but they're responding to it, and he's getting much higher response rates than when he was soft-pedaling. So I think the lesson is it's not easy and it's not always pretty, but you can achieve massive growth and still maintain your dignity and your integrity. I mean, he's operating a totally clean business. He's great customer service, bending over backwards, offering great deals. But some people find his marketing a little aggressive. Well,
you know, a lot of people, one comment from a customer could cause them to change their whole marketing. You know, they really take it to heart.
Yeah, but he's getting more than one comment. He's getting lots of comments.
It's like Gary Harvey used to say, don't worry about offending the hounds, worry about attracting the foxes.
That is great.
I know with some of my email marketing at first, you know, it does kind of freak you out when you get something negative back. But you just got to keep your eye on the big picture.
Yeah, I think I'm probably better suited to be a copywriter and a coach than a direct marketer. I mean, I was at my mastermind group last night. People were talking about getting this one or two messages and not getting thrown off. And I said, I got really thrown off by a message. I sent out some free content to my list, no pitch, you know, no tease, just free content. And this one guy writes back to me and he says, David, I guess you think your list is an ATM. Anytime you need money, you just write to us.
Was that recent?
Yeah. And so I wrote back to him. I said, oh, that's interesting that you would say that. I'm wondering why. I wasn't asking for any money at all. And he wrote back to me, and he said, oh, I'm sorry. I was having a bad day, and I misread what you were doing. You're absolutely right.
Well, okay, you have all these clients, and you hear about their businesses, and some of them are making millions of dollars, and you've got the chops to write. I'm sure you've thought about it. Why don't I sell something through direct mail using my own copy? Have you considered it? Have you done it?
I don't know. I've thought about it. It needs to be the right product. I mean, right now I've started a business where we're going to be selling a lot of stuff. We're going to be selling instruments and assessments to people. It's called the Value Drivers Institute, and we're going to be licensing people with tools that we are in the process of completing to help businesses get ready to sell. So we'll be using some direct marketing, but it's not going to be a typical mail order business. You know, if you think of Carlson Learning with the Performax test, things like that, it's going to be a little different. So, you know, one of the things I've noticed is I'm much more interested in creating and innovating and teaching than I am in maintaining. And, yeah, so I could definitely create a business, but I have to be careful about getting bored with routine because I won't continue with something if it's too boring. I think that's sort of obvious from my early life history when I kept jumping out of jobs because I didn't find them interesting anymore. My first info product was called Let Your Clients Do Your Selling, and it was an audio tape about referrals. And I think I sort of inadvertently or ironically achieved that because Ryan Dice had this marketing conference a few weeks ago, and at least four of my copywriting mentoring clients were there that I know of. The West Asia guy was there, and a guy from Washington. Washington State, a guy from New York, another guy from Washington State, and a few of them were around in the presence of another guy who knew about me, and he was watching them, and they were just like riffing and joking and improvising headlines and offers, and it sort of depressed him a little bit because he knew that he couldn't do that. And it was very hard and very slow for him. He's a really smart guy, successful guy, but it was painful. And so he wrote and he said, would you mentor me? I'd like to be able to do what these guys do. So we talked on the phone for over an hour, and I said, look, if you're going to want to get to that point, and he had some very specific things that he wasn't willing to do and things that he was, I said, okay, well, it's going to be a lot of hard work, but I can get to the point where you can do it a lot faster and a lot easier. And so he hired me, for $25,000. So I'd love to say, well, that happens to me every day, happens to me every week. It doesn't.
But your previous clients kind of referred him over in a way.
Yeah. And I hadn't even asked them for referrals, and they didn't even realize they were doing it. You know, one of the things that Bill Walsh, the 49ers coach, told me when I interviewed him, I asked him, hey, Bill, how do you know when you're being successful as a coach? And he said, well, one thing I can tell is when the players are saying the same thing to each other in the field that I said to them in the locker room, I know I'm getting through it all. And I've had clients tell me, including some of these guys, that, I can turn on the Garfinkel voice in my head. And that's pretty cool.
If anyone's listening to this and they really want a way to shortcut the copywriting process, I would definitely consider having a look at David's templates. And for more information on this, you can go to www.davidgarfinkeltemplates.com. That's www.davidgarfinkeltemplates. And Garfinkel is spelled G-A-R-F-I-N-K-E-L, davidgarfinkeltemplates.com. For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com. That's the end of our interview with David Garfinkel, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For more information on David's copywriting templates, go to www.davidgarfinkeltemplates.com.